Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for inviting me to your new and beautiful space and to worship with you this morning. My name is Laura Friedman, and I was recently ordained at the Vancouver Church, which John mentioned, which is also the church that I grew up in. I'm a Unitarian community minister, and I have spoken here once before, but it's been about 2 years. So it's good to be back. So I'm here with you today as both a Unitarian minister and as a fool. And for me, the two are inseparable. The work that I am doing as a Unitarian community minister in the downtown east side of Vancouver. Our ministry is called the Faithful Fools of Vancouver. It's a different model of ministry than many of the agencies and services you might know in the area. Ours is a ministry of presence. Instead of handing out food or blankets, our primary reason for being is to build relationship, to work with ourselves and others to create greater compassion. It's our belief as fools that an open and compassionate heart can change the world. Ultimately, we're trying to open hearts to compassion, one at a time. Our major program to practice this way of living intentionally is the street retreat. I've been leading one-day street retreats in Vancouver for the last couple of years. The work that I do with the Faithful Fools is based on the work of the Faithful Fools of San Francisco, my mentors. The street retreats grew out of the ideas and practice of Roshi Bernie Glassman from this reading this morning. Bernie Glassman began leading street retreats about 20 years ago in New York City. He wrote a book called Bearing Witness on his experiences of leading retreats in the streets and also in other places of tremendous suffering, such as Auschwitz. Glassman and others started the Zen Peacemaker Order to continue this work, and Glassman trained a handful of others to lead his retreats. The Faithful Fools of San Francisco and now of Vancouver have adapted Glassman's style and ideas. Fools' retreats are similar in intention, but also different. If you're interested after the service today, if you're interested in attending one of the street retreats, our next retreat is set for Saturday, December 8th, and I'd love to have any or all of you join me on the street, so please come talk to me. Last summer, I went on an extended retreat led by Genro Grover Gaunt of the Zen Peacemaker Order of New York City. Before that, I'd never spent a night on the streets of my own city. From August 2nd to 5th, I participated in a four-day street retreat in Vancouver. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. Going on a street retreat is intentionally stepping into the unknown. By going on street retreat, we vow to penetrate the unknown. Printed on your order of service this morning is a picture of a fool from the tarot card. This one in particular was designed by Osho. Here the fool is offering a flower, stepping off a cliff into the unknown. I think Parker Palmer was talking about this place of unknowing in our meditation this morning. Choosing to spend 4 days on the streets of Vancouver is choosing to step off that cliff into the unknown, choosing to plunge into a tender and raw place where we hope our eyes will be open to reality and our hearts will be open to compassion. The fool is a character of myth who stands in the royal court, a servant to the queen or king. The fool makes light of truth and reveals truth in a new way. The fool says what others fear to say. The fool stands in the space between, not noble, not royal, not common. The fool delights with humor, reminding us to laugh because life is absurd. The fool reminds us never to take ourselves too seriously. And sometimes, as faithful fools, we wear hats. as a reminder to ourselves and others never to take ourselves too seriously. A fool is aware, the word fool is from the Latin word follis, which means a bag of wind, or that which contains air or breath. The word spirit comes from this, the word meaning breath. A fool contains breath, is consciously filled with breath, as is every breathing living being. A fool is aware of that breath of life, and as fools, we practice noticing our breath constantly, bringing ourselves back to the present moment, to presence. Like the old woman truth in the story this morning, the fool delights in that absurdity of life. In order to go on the 4-day street retreat in Vancouver, we all begged at least $350, the entrance fee. You could not donate it. You had to ask for it. So even before walking on the streets as a group, we each individually started the practice with the practice of begging. I asked my colleagues, the Unitarian Ministers of Canada, and they generously provided me with the funds to attend the retreat. It is hard to ask. But at least that time, I got the opportunity, the gift of being able to explain why I was begging and what it was for. The money we raised, over $7,000, went 1/3 to the Zen Peacemaker Order and 2/3 to agencies we, the street retreats, the people on the street retreat, chose. Agencies who directly helped us or who we especially appreciated. Begging from people who care for us and support us was just the beginning. On the street retreat, we all agreed to try panhandling. Asking strangers for money was so hard. I felt so much shame. It just felt wrong in a way. I was only there for a few days. What right did I have to ask? Genro, our leader on the street retreat, had prepped us by talking about the practice of begging. He encouraged us to see it as giving people the opportunity to be generous. He believed this experience of begging to strangers was worth trying. He encouraged us for a while to ask everyone to be indiscriminate. Everyone deserves the chance to be generous. In the downtown east side, the 13 of us stuck out because we looked so perky and bright-eyed and healthy. On street corners, in lines for soup kitchens, in the line for United We Can, there were people shriveled with disease or drugs or age. Glassy-eyed people were scarred and scabbed and skinny. Bony and worn with distended bellies and crooked hanging backs. Bodies ravaged by drugs and disease. People who could barely stand. Who were so obviously suffering. One day, we offered a Buddhist service of chant and prayer to ease the suffering of the hungry ghosts in our world, the hungry ghosts who sleep in our streets and die quickly or slowly, violently or quietly, in the downtown east side. The atmosphere felt different when we left the downtown east side. We were spending our night sleeping in parks. We took no showers. We were dirty and smelled it. In the fashionable shopping district, Robson Square, we were given looks of suspicion and hostility, as opposed to the curiosity and friendliness we met in the downtown east side. And so it was on a Saturday afternoon, our group split up into pairs and dispersed to try begging for an hour. In my pair, we decided to try Granville Street, near Robson. We walked there together in our 2-day-old smelly clothes and unwashed hair. And I felt okay, aware of myself, but okay. among all the well-dressed people. As soon as I crossed the street from my partner, as soon as I was alone and stuck out my hat to start asking for money, I felt incredibly vulnerable. Here was me exposing my personal need, drawing attention to it even, from complete strangers. Genro had told us to have something in mind. Why were we begging? What did we hope to buy? After 2 days on the street, really all I wanted was a toothbrush. That was my goal. So I stood on Granville Mall asking, spare change, please, spare change. I seemed to be a magnet for nastiness. Maybe it was my lack of confidence, my lack of assertiveness. Maybe it was just my luck. The first nastiness I received from a young woman. She looked me up and down with scorn and as she was passing and said, what do you need money for? A toothbrush, I offered, but I had already ceased to exist for her. And that's exactly what it felt like. I didn't exist to people. People who walked inches from my face didn't even notice me. But I preferred that treatment to rudeness. I really did need the toothbrush. A little while later, I caught another woman's anger. She walked right past me, and then a few paces later, she turned with anger bubbling, baring white teeth. She snarled, you can get everything you need at the churches downtown. She started to go off on a rant about the churches downtown. She didn't hear me ask, what about a toothbrush? Can I get a toothbrush? She stopped and said, what? A toothbrush. Do you know where they give away toothbrushes? And her response to that, when she did hear me, that's it. You've got to stop lying to yourself. If you want to get out of this vicious circle, you've got to stop lying. And then she turned and said, the gathering place, and walked away. She was gone. She left me reeling on the sidewalk. I don't really know what just happened. I wasn't even sure. I had just been the target for her anger. She had hurled her projections onto me like spears. And their sharp, pointed edges hurt. Though honestly, I wasn't even sure what she was accusing me of. And then I turned my head and noticed a different woman. She was darting erratically between cars driving on the road. I saw her angry stride and her sunburnt face as she stomped towards me. But still I asked her, spare change? And she spun around and looked at me straight in the eye and yelled, you've got to be crazy to ask me for money. So now I felt a little crazy. But I had asked. She walked away, but she didn't get 10 paces away from me before she turned around again. And this time her face was softer. Listen, lady, if you want to make some money at this, you got to fix up a little. The next time you get some money in your pocket, you go into a store and buy yourself something sexy, you know? I mean, maybe your boyfriend likes you the way you are, but you're never going to make any money. Get something sexy. And she left. And I felt oddly comforted. She was taking care of me. And I also felt like I so wanted to go back to the downtown east side, where people were kinder. People at least saw me. At least there I existed. I recently read an article on a violin virtuoso named Joshua Bell. He's well known in classical music circles. The Washington Post asked him to perform an experiment, to go in regular clothes and play his violin in rush hour at the subway station just to see what would happen. Would a crowd gather? Would people recognize him? Would security need to be called? Joshua Bell agreed and played an hour. With his heart and his soul, he played a concert on a violin worth millions. Over 1,000 people rushed through the station, and the response was, for the most part, silence. A few stopped and listened, and in donations he made about $50 for the hour. $50 is a lot. I only made $1.50. An excerpt from the Washington Post article speaks of Bell's experience. He says, "It was a strange feeling that people were actually ignoring me. At a music hall, I'll get upset if someone coughs or if someone's cell phone goes off. But here, my expectations quickly diminished. I started to appreciate any acknowledgement, even a slight glance up." This is from a man whose talents can command $1,000 a minute. Before he began, Bell hadn't known what to expect. What he does know is that for some reason, he was nervous. "When you play for ticket holders," he explains, "you're already validated. I have no sense that I need to be accepted. I'm already accepted." Here there was this thought. What if they don't like me? What if they resent my presence? What if they resent my presence? And this from a gifted and talented violin player who is offering his beautiful music to strangers. And yet he is only a human being, made of blood and bones and heart, vulnerable and precious like the rest of us. And I, too, wondered if people resented my presence as I stood with my hat out on Granville Street. Some people didn't keep me wondering too long. I'm curious what I reminded them of: poverty, suffering, illness, disease, death, or perhaps their own tenuous grasp on comfort and ease. I didn't realize when I opened my hand and asked for money that I would be the mirror for some to see whatever it was they hated or feared. I think I look at beggars differently since my 4 days on the street. Do they go through what I went through? They must want that toothbrush or cigarette or beer or whatever pretty badly. Often when I'm in the downtown East Side, I end up at Carnegie Center on Main and Hastings, which feels to me like the living room of the neighborhood. And once at Carnegie, I'm drawn to the wall of missing people. It's a bulletin board near the entrance. It's always changing, black and white photocopied faces and handwritten notes, happy, smiling faces staring out. Young women, healthy-looking men, children, mothers, daughters, sisters, staring out with pleading words. Families seeking lost ones. It's always heart-wrenching to see, and I'm drawn to it like a magnet. People missing, dying, sick, killed. I wish it wasn't so. The first night out was cold and the ground was hard. During the night, we were woken by a prostitute and her John looking for a quiet place and stumbling over us. In the morning, we were tired and weary. We sat in a park and had a council, a way of reflecting on our experiences so far. The night before, someone on the street had given me a great gift, a ripe mango. I placed the mango on our makeshift altar in the center of our circle. When someone spoke in council, we used a talking piece, taking something from the altar. At some point, Genro, our leader, chose the mango. And as we watched, he broke out in laughter, totally overwhelmed by the mango perfume. At the end of our council, I cut up our precious mango to share. It was such a treat. So sweet and ripe and perfect, rare fresh fruit on the street. And so much sweeter because it was shared with these gentle people, these vibrant faces, these new friends, my companions on the cold, hard ground. A simple and beautiful pleasure, no less splendid for its simplicity. Saturday night was really an adventure. It was the finale for the fireworks in English Bay. A few of us decided to go, so on tired feet, we walked from the downtown east side to English Bay, arriving just in time to catch the last 5 minutes, which still was pretty exciting, but that was only the beginning of the adventure. We decided to try bottle picking. We spread out onto the beach, and this is the evening after the baking, and I was surprised by the stark contrast. This felt so different. People were happy to give us their bottles, grateful even. They were friendly and polite. The air was merry. The spirits were high. It was like trick-or-treating. One interaction sticks out. I was walking along the beach, and I saw a woman standing beside a log, and she had a bottle and a can at her feet. And so I went up to her and asked her if I could take her bottle and can, and she reached down and picked them up, and I held out my garbage bag, and she reached over it to put the can and the bottle in the bag, and she looked straight in my eyes and said to me, "I was going to throw them in the garbage, but you're the next best thing," and dropped them in. Her words slid off my back, as opposed to the woman earlier who had called me a liar. If it had been her intent to hurt, she had succeeded. So I guess I don't mind being the next best thing to garbage. If you say it kindly, if you look into my eyes and see that I exist, that just like you, I'm a fellow human being. 4 days on the street took me to a raw place. A place where I could not deny my own suffering any more than I could deny the open suffering of so many hungry ghosts. And at the same time, it was such a gift. A chance to walk in honesty with open eyes with 12 others. A chance to sleep outside under the stars. A chance to appreciate things like the smell and taste of a mango, and having friends to share it with. It was at times overwhelming, funny, sad, poignant, rich. 4 days of life lived with intention, lived fully open to the beauty and suffering that is always there, but that so easily slips through the fingers of my awareness if I don't take the time to sit and breathe it all in. Blessed be.